Hello and welcome to Broadcast Focus. My name is Russell Trafford-Jones and thanks for joining me. On Broadcast Focus, we talk to the people behind the media and entertainment industry. And today, I'm very happy to be joined by Neil Romanek, Editorial Director of The Flint. Hello and welcome to the show, Neil.
Hello, Russell. Thank you very much for having me on. Great to see you.
Is it worth, just before we launch into our general conversation, just outlining what the Flint's goals and ambitions are?
Yeah, I'll just kind of let you know a little bit about how we kind of got to the Flint. So I've been an editor of kind of several different industry magazines, mostly the kind of broadcast and media tech magazines. Mm-hmm. And I've done a magazine called Feeds, which is still around. We'd always tried Feed to try to stick in sustainability wherever we could. And I'd finished at Feed to go over to work for BAFTA Albert, because BAFTA Albert needed a new head of comms over there. And I was like, I need to get over there and do that, because that was something I was really passionate about. And, you know, when I was there, it was really amazing to see all this great work being done. But it was also really clear that there are a lot of silos in the industry around sustainability, a lot of people reinventing the wheel, and not a lot of great communication. So when I finished there at Albert, some people approached me. Neil Howman, who has been in the broadcast technology space for a while, approached me and said, you know, we want to do this publication around ESG, ESG in the media industry. And that's how The Flint came about. And The Flint tries to be a hub. Been around now for about a year. Tries to be a hub for thought leadership, case studies, best practice, interviews, opinion for sustainability, basically from ideation and development through to distribution of content. And the reason we kind of try to take on that whole giant elephant is because you can't isolate those different parts of the supply chain. You know, in order to be sustainable in one area, you really need to have had people earlier in the supply chain thought about it. You know, you can't just hand it off and go, here, make this sustainable, you know, because we hear those conversations again and again. If only somebody had thought of this, you know, before it got to us, we could have done so much more. So that's what we try to do, is try to provide a place where the industry can come and talk about sustainability, trade ideas, and kind of come together and find some common ground.
That's cool. And so the Flint publishes throughout the week on anything that's new and upcoming on the sustainability aspects.
Yeah. So we do we have a website, we do a monthly podcast, we do a bi-monthly webinar series. We're working right now on our first big special publication, which is part of a regional series that we're going to do on different global regions and how they handle sustainability. And this one will be about the Nordics. So we're looking at kind of how the Nordic countries are approaching sustainability. Of course, they're doing a lot of great work up there. But then also there's some surprising things about the Nordics that you would be perhaps shocked to learn about sustainability. So we're going to be rolling that out towards the end of the month in the next few weeks.
Cool. So I wanted to start by talking about Albert, because it's the most visible program over in the UK and to an extent Europe now for being sustainable. So it's based upon production. So it presumably is any type of production can use the tools from Albert. And then is the idea that there's a kind of a certification for each program, or is it just that we followed these guidelines, so at least we've done what we can?
Well, it's a little bit of everything. So it also helps to know a bit about the history of Albert. So It started, I can't remember the year, but a surprisingly long time ago, but it started just as a carbon calculator. So Albert was a carbon calculator that was spun out of the BBC, and the BBC gave it to the industry and said, here, you know, take this, and basically gave it to BAFTA to sort of hold on to it and develop it. And then that carbon calculator kind of built around that, more activity started. So just awareness, and then carbon literacy training, and then that being able to certify productions. And kind of as it evolved, and basically just kind of a young, scrappy people who were really passionate about saving the planet, you know, kind of began to build this up. It caught the eye of the broadcasters who really wanted to kind of more formalize things. So now broadcasters will mandate Albert certification, which means that productions need to have a carbon action plan that they put through Albert. They need to calculate their emissions, and then in some cases then offset those emissions as well. And then you get Albert certified. You'll have seen on UK productions at the end of the credits a little footprint logo that says Albert certified. And it used to be that it was certified carbon neutral up until just a couple of years ago. And that was because Albert would offer offsetting as well. as part of the package, or they had a partner offsetter, but you could use any offset company you wanted to, and that would be certified then carbon neutral. But of course, as we become more and more familiar with offsetting and how the science is a bit dodgy, and also some of the companies quite, you know, are dodgy, you really don't know what you're getting with offsetting. So they've dropped that, and now that certification is just Albert certified, I think is what it is now. And I think that's actually an important thing, looking at those kind of certifications and industry guidelines and stuff, is that it's always evolving. And I think that's something that kind of people, that's hard for people to kind of to get their head around, is that, okay, we're certified, great, we're all done, but we can keep learning more. The industry keeps changing. I think, and actually a great example is the latest Albert report. So they do their annual report. And so the report for 2023, so it's kind of the report that came out this year that looked back last year at 2023, found that the average, kind of the average production's emissions had gone up by 30% over previous years, which is an astonishing number. Gigantic ballooning emissions. And the reason, one of the reasons, well, they speculate, and it seems quite, you know, that this is probably why. One of the reasons is actually there are more dramas being made, and those are okay, larger. And so that kind of skews the emissions a bit. But also, it's just that their tools are much better. So they've kind of upgraded the tools over the years, and there's kind of a new set of tools. So the data is much more accurate, which means that in previous years, people have been undercounting the carbon they've been emitting. Mm-hmm. So it's, yep, you know, as things like that happen, it's like, okay, well, we didn't really know that. So it's kind of continuously evolving.
You can only go on the data you've got at the time, right? And if you improve it, then you know, it doesn't mean you were wrong to have done and undercounted, so to speak, but if that was the info you had. But of course, you know, a lot of it isn't just about using electricity from the mains, but you know, as depending on where you are and as the energy mix of the country changes, then you know, day by day, year by year, the carbon will be different as well. So that needs to be taken into account. And so with Albert, then, are they presumably productions will use this, they'll be able to use the calculators ahead of time to say, well, if we send 20 people and we spend 4 days there, then we're going to blow our budget or what we're trying to aim for. So is that something that you think people do?
Well, ideally, and you know, of course, I didn't speak for Albert, you need to definitely get April Sotomayor on, you know, from Albert to talk about these things in detail. And she can, you know, she knows everything about this. But that's the idea of having the carbon action plan that they do, is so you can look at stuff ahead of time. And the more you can do ahead of time, the more you can plan, the better. I mean, it often does happen. It's like, well, we'll get a helicopter in and we'll worry about it later. That's a lot of the way productions kind of end up being. But the more you can plan your production beforehand, and also the more that things can happen in the script stage, you know, where you can actually see the whole production and know ahead of time what you're going to do and what you need to do, who you need to send places. And do you really even need, you know, could we do this on a volume somewhere, an LED volume, you know, do we need to fly everybody to, you know, the South America or whatever? So these are things, and Albert is always talking about this, you know, the planning and looking ahead before you start the process is kind of the most important thing you can do. Because you know, so many like production, you know, managers are just sitting here filling out at the very last minute, filling out their material for their Albert certification. And often, you know, they just had to do what they've had to do. You know, they haven't been supplied with the proper planning in order to make things as sustainable as they could be.
I as part of the IET, we ran a day at Savoy Place a few years ago on sustainability. We're very pleased to have representatives from Albert, from the BBC, and also from Dimpact talking. And that was interesting to me. So to come on to Dimpact, I assume that's how you say it.
I hear people say Dimpact and Dimpact. I would say Dimpact.
But that's a kind of consortium which looks a little bit further than just the productions. You can fill in how you're using CDNs and stuff to get a wider understanding of the use of energy. What do you know about how, you know, Dimpact interacts with Albert?
No, I'm not as familiar with a lot of what Dimpact does or Dimpact. But I know that they're very much aware of that, and I think there probably is some sense at Albert of it. And again, you need to talk to April Sotomayor about this at Albert. But I think there's some sense of like, that's that side of video delivery taken care of. That's none of our business. Dimpact is taking care of that so we can focus on production. And of course, you're moving video around. You're moving it around in all kinds of different places all throughout. You know, you're using cloud from the moment you start production. Now cloud becomes an important part of it. So if you're not thinking about cloud and CDNs and how you're delivering video as part of the mix from the very beginning, I think you're making a mistake. It becomes easy when you look at production, because you can try to reduce production to just mostly physical things that you're moving around. So flying and travel and stuff. And those are the big emitters. Those are the big, moving stuff and people. That's where you can have a lot of the big emissions. But it can be easy to just get focused on that physical side and kind of forget, like, you're also moving all these electrons around all the time when you're moving, moving around data, or you're moving around video, or especially if you're working on an effects heavy or animation, animated film, where you've got servers burning electricity all the time, and that's part of production that I think maybe is easy to lose sight of.
Yeah, indeed. And then on the vendors side, or is it just not vendors? I'm not quite sure. We've got DPP as a sustainability program, where really what you're trying to do is explain what you get up to. And I think it's a level of certification on that. What's your view on the ability for us to, as an industry, let's say, come up with more standards? I think we've got de facto standards. I wonder, is there something that we should be doing over and above what exists already for the other parts of the transmission chain, or perhaps to encapsulate the whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, there. I think there can be, with a lot of, a lot of these standards, they can get very localized and kind of, again, like we're talking about the silos that people get in. You can get very siloed and go, okay, well, what's our little thing that we do, and how can we make that more sustainable? And first of all, I think you end up getting focused on the micro stuff rather than the macro stuff. And I think we always need to be looking at the big overarching problems and issues and how do we solve those. So kind of rather than picking, like, okay, use a war analogy, I'm fighting a battle with that person over there. It's my imperative to win the fight with that person over there. You need to sort of always be stepping back and thinking, what's the big overall objective that's going to help us win the war? And so I think it always comes back to, how do you get rid of fossil fuel usage, period? And how do you create kind of new business models that allow you to not have to do those, to use those fossil fuels? And so I think it kind of often will come back to, instead of making things more efficient, the efficiency is a big part of it, which means, we'll use less electricity. But I think it's like, well, how do we avoid having to do XYZ in the first place? What if we didn't have to do that at all? And always stepping back and trying to think about what those big pictures are. And so, like, I know the DPP standard, I believe that's self-reported.
That's true.
People kind of sort of say what they're doing and what not doing. A lot of these things are, which is great, but it can also mean that you're kind of making up what sustainability means yourself, rather than looking at that bigger picture and what's necessary to kind of win that war, as it were. And that's one of the problems with, when we talk about sustainability, is that word kind of doesn't, that means so many things. It's almost a meaningless word, you can talk about, well, we're doing this amazing stuff around, say, diversity and stuff in our company, which is an essential part of sustainability, of that big picture. Or you might be, doing stuff, well, okay, we have got like some great energy reduction programs, and we've got, this product is, the shelf life of this product, it lasts longer than, all of the competing products, whatever. And there's kind of these little things which are great, but you always have to be looking at what is, how does that add up to the bigger picture and kind of finding those bigger solutions.
Yeah, indeed. Does it make sense to try and have things which go from one country to another? So let's say it applies to North America and applies to the UK and Europe. Or does it make more sense to try and bring together smaller programs with, I don't know, presumably they might speak better to the local.
Because they're local. So, and that's one of the things the UK is actually, if you want to get sort of cynical about it, and I frequently am, no country is doing super well, but the UK has been leading in this, and especially in this industry. And a lot of it has to do with Albert's, especially, and Albert being a place where people can talk and the broadcasters can talk with each other. And it's also just kind of the right size where the industry is small enough that everybody kind of knows each other, but it also has a it punches, you know, well above its weight globally. And so it's kind of there's a sweet spot in terms of the UK and being able to sort of have influence and develop a lot of these things. But you're going to have very specific things in different regions. So like we're doing this focus on the Nordics now. So we're going to, you know, the publishing this thing will be out in a few weeks about the Nordics and sustainability. And they have very like they have, you know, it's a lot of green power up there, a lot of zero carbon power, hydroelectric, and Iceland, it's, you know, geothermal. And so there's some issues there where it's like, well, it's just not an issue in terms of our mains power. You know, our mains power is already really low carbon anyway. But then there are other issues where they're also tend to be very rich countries. So they're really overconsuming. So we're talking about, say, the circular economy and recycling and all that, you know, despite the fact that they do a lot of recycling. Most of that recycling goes to incineration for power, which is not great. But also they're because they're high consumers, it actually ends up being less than a lot of other countries. So there'll be kind of very specific things to different countries. And then you have, say, in the US, you know, you have right now you're having a political battle in the US where the just the idea of climate change as being a real thing is actually hanging in the balance, you know. And that's a very, you know, we kind of think, well, you know, there's crazy people everywhere, but that's a very real thing that's going to affect policy potentially. And will, you know, regardless of which way the election goes, is kind of a ripple that really will affect things. So it's kind of each country will have its own sort of political issues, environmental issues, infrastructure issues that will have a specific effect on things. And so I think in each country, each region, and in some ways, I guess you could, you know, boil it down to each industry. Has to find solutions with the things that it has in front of it. But then again, I think you also need to, and I think this is where the international part and the communication comes in, where you do need to agree on what some of the bigger goals are and what's real. So you do need to agree that the science says X, you know, about
Sure.
where we're headed and what we need to do. And I think that's where international communication can really, really come into play. And also you have things like in Europe, you've got the new CSRD directives, which will encourage people to globally to sort of be more mindful about sustainability. Because if you're a big European company, you've got to be able to sort of show what's in your supply chain now, which you didn't have to before. So people would be looking at that going, well, if I want to do business in Europe, I really need to clean up my act. So yeah, I think making sure that those big principles are looked at kind of across the globe is important.
So I bring this up. These are the people who are involved in Albert. At the top, we've got the main, what do they call them? Steering group. And then people are part of the consortium. And then affiliates, I believe, are the effectively production houses and post-production
Yeah, exactly.
studios. That's cool. I mean, it's a good it's a good list of people, and I think it continues to grow. Just to pick up on one thing that you said, you talked about the fact that we are I think the UK in essence is perhaps leading is not the right word in terms of success, but at least in terms of measuring and activity, a lot of that is down to the fact that we are able to use Albert, and we've got that enshrined in various broadcasters' requirements for programs, which is cool. There's a lot that goes into looking at production level success, and from my experience in the past, I've sold equipment and software to companies that are working on a production on productions, and they need that for a particular production, but they also need they needed you know year-long support in order to keep on using that. But you know, and then we suddenly found that there was a big difference between the amount of budget that production has to spend and buy some kit, and the fact that the organization that owns it now has a 24/7, 365 day requirement to support that equipment, and that can't come out from the production because the production's finished after a few months. So it feels to me that there is therefore on the sustainability side and not the commercial side, the same problem where we've got organizations which are running 24/7, which are doing showing repeats of the productions that have been Albert certified. And it feels like there's not as much oversight or measurement when it comes to the overall running of the broadcaster. Streaming and media entity. Is that something that we're still letting them sort themselves out and self-report?
There's still quite a bit, and that's where it kind of just glom over a bit into the, you know, the outside of production. So a lot of the broadcasters are doing quite well in terms of that. I mean, Sky has always done, he's always kind of been a leader with that. If I kind of lean out my window, I'll be able to see their wind turbine they've got kind of over the fields, because they're quite close. ITV as well has been doing a lot. They've just had a new assessment and a new sort of program kind of action plan for how they're going to do sustainability. So kind of on that bigger level, I think the broadcasters are doing pretty well in their transformations. And also you're looking at the consortium there, the Albert consortium as well also has, I think it's part of the consortium. I might be wrong about that. But there are different working groups. There's like kind of a sports working group and a news working group that bring together the sports companies and sports broadcasters, news broadcasters, and they'll be working very specifically on those parts of the broadcast chain and kind of their problems. Because they know that their segment of the industry, they'll be aware of the problems and possibly some solutions more than somebody just coming from the outside would. So they're kind of doing that as well. Yeah. But there is also a program that Albert started a couple of years ago, which is really, really good, called the Studio Sustainability Standards.
Okay.
And that looks at, as you would think, studios and kind of how the actual studios and facilities can be improved. And it's a rating system with quite a few different things, from, you know, environment to employee well-being and biodiversity and a whole kind of score sheet. And it's really well investigated. So it's not just self-reporting. You know, they really have to go and kind of show evidence for everything. And out of that, they get a rating, you know, kind of from participated to outstanding. And the first year, I think they're now starting their third year of it. The first year they had no outstandings. I don't know if they even had any outstandings last year. I can't remember. But the idea is that you kind of keep coming back and participating every year and you can kind of climb up that ladder. And it's been really good for those facilities to, again, look at that whole, you know, all their infrastructure, you know, how are they doing in terms of their energy or their efficiency in the stuff that they've built in or their data centers and all that stuff. So mm-hmm. that's kind of another piece that, again, doesn't kind of solve everything, but it's kind of one more thing that gives the individual studios and facilities a chance to assess how they're doing. And that's become an international thing. So it started in the UK, but now there's a couple studios in the US. There's a big studio in Culver City, I think maybe Sony in Culver City, and then some in Europe as well. So it's expanded, I think, and it's kind of a great sort of targets a really nice size of business. You know, those facilities or those big, you know, the sound stages or studios who are bringing a lot of people through, and that's going to affect those people who come through because they're going to say, oh, look, they've done some interesting sustainable stuff here. But also they're able to kind of, as you're saying, you're suggesting, I think, kind of hold the forts and take care of some of those issues that go on, you know, after the production has gone away. You know, they're still kind of trying to manage that.
Yep. Here's the people who are part of Dimpact. It's nice to see WeTransfer at the bottom there because
yeah, there you go.
We're always sending files and things like that around. Yeah, so I think that overall, it feels to me like we're doing a good job in terms of starting to work out how to measure things. We know there's plenty of work left to do, but I think what we've seen from the Albert situation, where companies have started saying, "Well, this is what we need you to do now," is that has enabled a big uptake of Albert, and it often feels to me like the only way that really gets that large swathes of the industry doing a certain thing is through effectively, you know, that RFP or that commissioning side of things. It feels to me perhaps there aren't that many programs that a broadcaster could mandate or at least say, you know, we'll give you bonus points if you're part of this program. But I guess with that, it's a chicken and egg. If they're not there, then, you know, they're not going to be specified.
I think there are some things about, again, always looking to that bigger picture and what's the, you know, and how do you make it as simple as possible? And I thought, you know, one of the things that would be interesting to have, say, for Albert, for example, is, you know, if you kind of crunching the numbers and doing all the CO2 and the emissions, and you go, okay, there's this emissions. Our emissions are half what they were last month. Great. But if you can just do simple things like no flights, like, okay, there were no airplanes were used in the making of this show. Sure. Well, that's like something really simple and really concrete that also communicates to people. And also is a thing that, did we do that? No, we use planes. No, we didn't use planes. And it just kind of, that becomes a step change. And I think those kinds of step changes are kind of what's required rather than just kind of whittling away a little bit at a time of this thing to try to make it smaller and smaller. You know, how can you like do a big leap like that? So I think it's kind of looking for what are those big step changes kind of technologically are, but also kind of in how we work. And I know there are some like the roadmaps, for example, for Wales. There's a program called Green New Deal for Wales that has a path for decarbonizing and stuff. And it's pretty rapid and pretty good. And there's a film, London has come up with a similar thing for kind of London power and energy. And again, it's kind of, you know, decarbonizing, but you do at some point do have to kind of pull the Band-Aid and say, okay, how do we do something completely different? And I think COVID has been obviously a great example for that. And one of the, you know, if you're going to try to find the silver lining there, it is that thing that's showing people that like, no, you can actually, you can, if you have to, you can change your whole business over the weekends if you really have to. Because people were forced to really rethink how they did everything. And it was like, you know, that was kind of a pain, but it was, we kind of did that. And then there are just sort of lessons that came out of that. I think sometimes where you're looking for those, where can you make those big giant changes? And I think people who can make those actually will be, you know, the business side will be way ahead because they'll be able to sort of, rather than the sort of slow evolution, they'll be able to make these big leaps forward.
And just out of fairness, this is the DPP's roster of participating companies. So lots of vendors there, which I think is really good. I just hope that continues to grow.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see like sort of at the DPP and kind of a lot of these organizations, how small the sustainability team is and how much work they're doing. So I know that it's only, you know, really one kind of major central figure over there at DPP who's really kind of driving a lot of sustainability. And that's kind of the way it often happens. You know, there's sort of a handful of passionate people that really can create a lot of change. And, you know, there's not always a lot of money being put into those departments. I think one of the things that, you know, we'll get some change. And there was a discussion at IBC among some of the CEOs of some of the tech companies about sustainability. It was at the Media Tech Sustainability Series event that they did. And it was mentioned that, you know, one of the things that can really bring change is legislation and regulation that will bring kind of big changes. So you do have like, well, we don't have enough money to really hire a really big sustainability staff. And I was talking to somebody from a kind of well-known analyst recently, and he was saying, but when there's legislation, the money is suddenly there. The money magically appears, sometimes a lot of it, if there's legislation or regular, the threat of legislation. So it's like, there's money there, but you know, it's it may not voluntarily come out, but if there is regulation, you know, that comes about or legislation, that money will appear magically.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much for talking through these topics. I think it's important that we explore them and hope that we can make progress. I just want to say that I couldn't make this program without Becky and Fiona at Page Media. So thank you to them for supporting this this channel. Thank you, Neil, for being on the show. If you like this, then please do make sure you're subscribed. It's always possible to tick the like button unless you've already done it, in which case you don't need to worry about it anymore. But Neil, thanks for being on the show, and I hope to speak to you again soon.
Thank you so much. It was great to talk with you.